Welcome back to Pro Coach Radio, episode 5, with 5 guests. We didn't plan that, but it will go with it. We'll go with it. Lads, how are we? Tom, Ross, Zach, Emil, people listening in the audio, you won't be able to see the screen, but for people on YouTube, you've got the glorious... What should we call ourselves? Some kind of...
Just a the Fantastic Five.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that.
4 friends and Zach.
Very good, Ross. Very good.
Zach's laptop may die at some point in the podcast, but we're just going to run with it anyway. Emil, how are things going, mate? This Emil's first appearance on the podcast.
Yes, everything is going really well. So we just started the off season a couple weeks ago after I got home from my 3-week trip to Mexico. And that was following my post-show period. So that was like a nice transition to take some downtime and really get my mind straight for this coming off season.
Yeah.
And we've taken a little bit of a different approach this time compared to previous off seasons where we had more of a gap to fill out. And we took a little bit of more of a aggressive approach, I'd say. And the bottlenecks previously has been digestion and an appetite falling off.
Mm.
So we're taking a more conservative approach this time and just starting calories at a more moderate set point and taking the escalation slower. We got a whole year now also where previously we had like half a year of off-season available to us before prepping again. So
Emil, sorry, just a quick one. How far under the cap are you in terms of weight class at the moment? Surely you can't be too far off of it.
Well, every time we come down, we just come down to like, well, the conditioning obviously improved, but I think we got down to like 205 again, and my cap is 220.
The load room.
So we've got a lot of room still, and that's why like I've taken this whole year.
You have 15 pounds to go.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you can
always get fucking easy peasy. It's just great. Every time you need to make weight, you're like, he's pissed, mate.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that was like, we thought we would be filling out more of it from last off season. We did make some significant improvements from the 2021 into the 2022 season. Especially my posterior chain was brought up a lot. I think like my back double biceps being one of my previously weaker shots was actually one of my stronger shots.
Yeah.
I have a really wide frame. My clavicles are really wide. So like I have more width than most guys. It just takes me a little bit longer to get the thickness needed to stand against.
Yeah.
But now we're taking this whole year off. We're aiming to compete in 2024, probably in the spring. So, yeah, a little bit more conservative approach this time, just taking a slower escalation in both food and androgens and everything that comes along with it, body weight. We know that for me, it's just about keeping me productive for as long as possible. And previously, it's been like that vicious cycle of the off season where appetite stops dropping, and that's when you should care more about your food, but that's when you start to care less, and then food gets even more boring, and then appetite gets worse, and you feel lethargic, so you don't do your steps, and it's just a clusterfuck. So I'm just staying on top of shit this year, actually doing something about my food being tasty, and also not like last year we started the off season like 2 weeks in, I was like, fuck food. And now we're 5 weeks in, and I'm still like, hungry for every meal, like, I love it. So, exciting and strength is just progressing. And we just started escalating bloods 2 weeks ago. Looked very nice. Actually, some of the best bloods we have ever done. So yeah, a lot of positive things ahead.
Yeah. His process is very much keep the ball in play for as long as possible. Once you hit the wall, it's fucking tough going after that. Because I remember the first off season we did, you hit the wall after like 2 months, and then you did like 6 more months.
I had like we had severe digestion problems. Like I was throwing up just randomly times of the day. It could be after meal one. It could be after meal four. We thought I might had a.
And then you can't pinpoint it, can you? Then you can't pinpoint like, well, what is it? And it's like, no, it's just the fact that I'm eating too much and my stomach just doesn't fucking like it.
Yeah. And you know, I think the digestion starts in your mind. If you want the food or not, like you eat with your eyes as well. And when you wake up and think, I just want to fast for this week, like the entire week. That's just not a good way to start the week, right? And
that's Kyle's diet at the minute.
That's my diet.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, The funny thing is, like, that appetite loss, just like I had to go to like dog end of prep before my appetite returned. And that's the way it's been for the past 2 years. So like post show last year in October, I was like, I need to not overeat. I need to not kill my appetite, because that is what will keep me running throughout an off season, is the ability to eat and digest.
I'm really
excited for this off season. Training is going well and got so many tools to play with still.
Carl, you said earlier, did you get questions actually for today?
I've got some.
Oh, sick. Okay, cool.
Did you get any, Ross? Or did I think some of the boys put one up? Yeah.
I feel like asking myself, why did I put a Q&A for 30 minutes in advance? But I think you did ask
myself. A short notice.
Dear. I was just about to say, it brings me back, force feeding brings me back to that first push that me and you did, Tom, where you had like 750 milliliters of orange juice with every single meal.
Times before trial, there's like BC and then there's AD. Maybe AD is before, so BC, yeah. So AD is actually before in this time. AD is androgen dominance, where I just like as much shit as I can put in my body at once. And then there's the BC, which is the cow, you know. The way like I'd done it before, like everyone knows that I'd been like a complete donkey with stuff. I pushed up like stupid fucking high amounts of food, blah blah blah, whatever. I was like 300 pounds of shit basically at that point. Got to Cal, did that aggressive super duper speed run of cutting, got some crap off me, and then we're like pushing up from there basically. To be fair, that was really good. I was about 308, 310, whatever, and then 312 at like my peak before I was like, yeah, I can't eat anymore or do anymore. And it was, that was hard. But I used to, I'd eat the meal, whatever, the small size meal, do a protein shake with that meal, and then sip on orange juice or this lemonade juice drink thingy that I had as well, which was like really good. I used that as well, and then I used like pomegranate juice, anything like that. I'd just like sip on that in between, and then I'd basically just kick start the meal again however many hours after.
The irony is, like, when I go to the gym now, and I sometimes think in my head like, I wish I was heavy again, but then I think what it took to actually get there and maintain it. And I was like, nah, I'm good.
I had it today. I was like watching these like young lads squat, and they were squatting like 200. And I was like, I used to fucking do 260 for reps. I'm like, I wish I could just go in here on the other side of the rack and just be like squatting up and down with fucking, you know, repping it. But I'm like, but I can't do it anymore. I'm fucking burnt.
Yeah, you're glass. You suddenly become the guy who comes up to people in the gym. I used to do that. Back in my day.
Do you have the clients where they're like, they don't have a high food demand, and they're like, oh, I wish I had to eat 5,000-6,000 calories, and you're like, no you don't, it's not fun.
How it feels. So shut up.
Yeah,
fucking
we are in it,
oh man. Jesus. So if you've got someone who can grow on like mid-range sort of stuff, they never get to that point where they're like stuff to the teeth, you know, they just, oh god, the ease of it, you know. I've got a guy dieting at the moment, actually, a really funny one. I've got a guy dieting, he's on 700 grams of carbs and he's 4 kilos off his weight cap.
Really?
What?
Yeah, he's real lean already. And I was like, are you actually eating all of this? I'm like, you're not doing weight instead, are you? And he's like, no, raw weight, like everything. And yeah, fucking man, I'll show you him later, but yeah, he's very, very good.
Yeah, you should probably just pull the DMP and just hit me, right?
That's my kind of guy.
When your last resort becomes your first resort.
Yeah.
That was my only resort.
Yeah, basically, I couldn't get T3 on clean, so just use DMP.
Ross in prep was like, Carl, just use me as a guinea pig. I'll do anything. And yeah, he did.
It's like, the only way to describe it, I've described it to people before, and then it's like, the only way to describe it is like, it's the closest you'll feel like you're dead without dying. Well,
I still remember Zach's prep. Was it the year before last, wasn't it, your prep, Zach? And he was like, he was like, see your organs lean, posing like 8 weeks out. And Zach was like, still a bit more left to come off, isn't there, Cal? Still a bit more left to come off. So you can still get my lower back lean. It's like, Zach, I can literally see your organs.
Let's do a show this weekend, Zach. Absolutely fucking not.
No.
Absolutely not. We got 8 weeks left.
Right, question. This would be quite a good one for Ross to speak about. Does
GMP.
does a diabetic athlete have the potential to compete at a good level, a high level? And how much, well, that's a bit generic to say, how much carbs a day will they need in a surplus? But I guess we could talk about like food regulation and requirements there and the considerations for a diabetic bodybuilder.
Well, I remember Jason Poston, yeah, he was exactly. Like a top contender in men's physique.
Yeah.
He was a diabetic.
Yeah. And Fails is diabetic, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Fails is. And Kelvin is. Kelvin,
yeah.
Yeah.
What am I saying? But Kelvin is, yeah. And there was one other chap who was really good. There was actually another guy I knew, a chap with one leg, Paul. And he was used to do the PCA disabled category. And he had Hashimoto's, one leg, and he was diabetic. And he still managed to compete very, very well. Yeah.
That Masters that I had in 2022.
The Natty Geezer, the Natty chap.
Mikos.
He was as well, wasn't he? Yeah.
And it's the BMBF. I think he did UKDFB and BMBF, but he was diabetic, and that was like, he's obviously really switched on about managing it. He's like, he's into the data and he can manage it really well himself, but going through a prep with that, and he got all the way down, like he was peeled.
He was skinny.
He won the British in the BMBF, I think, and then he came up second or third in the other Fed, but he did incredibly well to manage that and go all the way down, and because the prep was like it was a long prep as well. But obviously his own self-awareness on the management of that did help that a lot, because he could auto-regulate things in his side a lot.
I would say to that question as well, the ability that is there to compete at a high level, it's just bodybuilding is already difficult as it is. So when you, certainly from a manager, you know, certainly just managing, you know, today sort of stuff, and when you throw diabetes into the mix, especially in a dieting phase as well, you obviously do really, really need to be careful, and obviously really just be switched on. And I think a lot of the time, I'm going hypo, well, you're not, you're kind of using that as an excuse now to put more carbs in. So you have to have that level of self-control as well, because there's a difference on, isn't there, obviously, about where your blood glucose will actually drop to in between a meal right before the next one as a diabetic, and then where it will drop to you know, in an actual hyperglycemic sort of episode thing. And one of my accountant James, he won't mind me saying this, he's fucking such a sick bodybuilder, but he bloody sucks at diet. You know James, don't you, Carl?
Yeah, Ross used him as well. I had a call with him a couple of hours ago.
Oh, so, basically, he's an absolute sick bodybuilder, absolutely sucks at dieting. Oh, yeah, I've got a hyper clamp coming on, so I had to eat some jelly babies. He's like half a pack, and then half a pack the next day. I'm like, James, like, I understand, but could you just, like, break down your meals a little bit more, perhaps? Like, maybe eat half of a meal now, and then a little bit later, rather than just like, oh, I need to eat this much sugar.
Yeah, it's like, I'm gonna eat this meal and rely on the hyper later on. But yeah, like, you can, of course you can be to a high level. You just, like you said, you just need to be absolutely on your shit. Like, and then I think what you said as well, Tom, is an interesting dynamic, in the sense that you need to be able to say to yourself, right, this isn't the hypo, I'm just hungry. You know, I think that's definitely something to be attentive to. But if you can manage it, and you are somebody who maybe works with somebody else who can also manage it, there's no reason that you can't be to a high level. And even if you look at it in an off-season setting, like, a massive bodybuilder basically eats themselves diabetic. Like, pretty much, you know, you get to a point where your capacity to manage the volume of carbohydrates that you're eating is too much for your own pancreas, you know? So this is when you run into, like, vicious elements of insulin sensitivity over time, where things like lactose are used. you know, that's, you kind of eat yourself to a point where it's like, right, you're eating enough food to warrant this now, because if not, you're going to get yourself in a situation where insulin sensitivity is so off skew that you're going to need this at some point anyway, you know. So that's kind of like what you end up doing in that regard. But an actual diabetic has no reason not to be able to compete at a high level if they're aware and they're on their shit.
If they're on it, yeah, on the ball, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. The best like management method there would just be to have a 24-hour monitor, like a freestyle Libre.
Ones that you stick in, yeah.
Then only the coach has access to. It's like, I'm going hypo. It's like, no, you're not, you bad bitch.
It's like, I can see it. Yeah, yeah. Why was there a spike at 3 a.m? You bastard?
Put the jelly babies down.
I remember when Jan started with me in his off season, he would basically give me a login to the software, the app that governed that tracked all the data. And then we set up his diet relative to what those trends would be week to week when he was pushing his food up. And then obviously when you're coming back down on the other side, you can kind of manage your diet and your meal frequency, et cetera, based on what that data is giving you. So that's instead of like just finger pricking yourself and doing random monitoring across the day, just to gather consistent trends there, that would be the best way to manage it.
Because you can stick the thing pretty much anywhere, can't you, realistically as well?
Yes, it's a patch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Patch.
Very, very cool, man. You can do that.
It's sick, yeah. You know, the apparently the new Oura Ring is supposed to have blood glucose monitoring in it.
What?
Oh, wow.
That's crazy. Really?
Yeah, as like a little prick in the actual ring when you put it on.
That's
so you're walking around with it stabbing you all day.
Well, you wouldn't feel it. It's like a little micro
needle.
Middle of the night.
Fucking yeah. Walk down the street, your fucking hand dripping with blood.
Well, at least you know it's working.
Just a hand dripping. This technology is wild. Gushing through your hands.
Right, let's go. Do you see clients which will not drop body fat, lose weight unless doing cardio, even when in a deficit?
If you're in a deficit, by virtue, you're going to lose weight. You have to, by absolute virtue. If you're not losing weight in a deficit, you're not in a deficit. That's just the reality.
It's not a deficit yet. It will be once your coach sees that it's not a deficit. And you
have to exactly. I suppose what they're really trying to say in one way or another is like, if you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, you know, that kind of way, like, oh, I'm doing my cardio, you know, I'm taking my lipos, I'm eating the right food, you know, like, and you're still not losing. The reality is it's probably just not low enough.
Too much of the right food, you know.
Exactly. Or you are pulling body weight off, and there's other elements, there's food volume, there's timing, there's so much shit that skews your body weight, you know.
Like, I actually really like one of the videos that you did the other day, Cal. It was one of your talks, I believe, I must have been Dubai when you were talking there about how you have the phases for ladies where sometimes they're starting and they're essentially just not really getting anything out of it until you actually get them down to that calorie point. And sometimes what I've had to be doing is I'll start assessing it within that first 2 or 3 week sort of like parameters, basically. And I'm like, okay, we're not really actually shifting the way that we should be shifting. So here comes a big drop, and then we do the big drop, and that will just ride out for a nice period of time, most of the time. And then I will be able to make the very small, minutiae sort of tweaks to things as time goes on. But sometimes you do have to have quite a steep drop to actually get them into that baseline sort of, deficit phase. And I think that was really interesting.
Ball rolling. Because
I was like, oh, I do that. Like, cool. Like, at least I'm on the right page. Like,
it's deadly as well, because when you do take those drops off people and you get it right, you can see that there's this kind of like a little bit more abrasive like rate of loss initially, and then it begins to slow down. You can see the point that they're getting to when you're actually at a point where that rate of loss is going to slow down. You know any change you're going to make is going to have a pretty objective result, which is always a cool thing to be able to do. So obviously once you're not slashing 800, you're not going to put calories down that low, but being able to kind of take that sort of drop gives you a little more control when it does start to slow down.
Which is actually really interesting as well from that sort of point of view. I know I'm very much steering off the question here a bit, but if you actually speak to a bunch of sort of old school bodybuilders, so very, very sort of like 90s bodybuilders, maybe early 2000s, they very much started their dieting process a lot shorter than we do now. So it's more like, I was speaking to someone the other day about this, maybe like a 10-week prep, an 8-week prep, a 12-week prep, something like that. That was very, very common leading in towards your regional. And then you take a short break and then you go back again for finals at the back end of the year. This is when EFBB was a thing and UKBFF obviously was then come into play. But what they would do is they would really go low to start off with. And yes, they had like your T3s, your T4, same sort of stuff that we have now. So obviously you have that sort of governance with, you know, thyroid sort of medication coming in straight away. Now, they would really go hard from the get-go. Like, I mean, if they were eating, you know, asshole sort of, you know, 5,000, 6,000 mad high calories, like, at that point, sometimes they would just sit down to 2,000. Like, straight down to 2K from their real high point. And they would just sort of, but they would, like, bladder cardio. And yes, we know, like, a lot of things back then were very much, like, old school and not as effective as what we know now. We've learned a lot in the last, like, 30 years, 30, 40 years. But there is still some sort of, like, oh, shit, that actually did work. They were basically speed running every prep that they did, which is quite interesting.
I think the like a connotation to that question there in regards to they're only dropping when I add cardio in, you're probably going to see that in circumstances that an individual's not taking an off season seriously as well, because they haven't built up the capacity in the off season to actually get food to a good point before they start prep. And I'm not a massive believer in, like, oh, we can, you know, the bullshit, let's build your metabolic ceiling as high as possible so you can diet on more calories. Like, realistically, you're only going to diet on more calories if you've got more lean tissue to actually metabolize energy in the first place. So if you gain muscle, you're going to diet on more calories because there's more lean tissue there. But getting enough time spent in a surplus in the off season outside of contest prep or outside of a deficit and building calories to a point where they're high enough for long enough will mean that you are going to see a response from those nutritional adjustments. And the people that probably don't take the off season and execute as they should, they haven't got the energy intake above that maintenance set point for a long enough period of time. Or maybe their tracking is just not very accurate across the year. Those are the individuals where they're going to have to, oh, I'm only dropping because I'm adding cardio. It's just because your caloric set point is not consistent through the year as a whole anyway.
And a lot of the time at the start, if you hammer in that cardio and that is what's getting you to drop initially, it's because you were so unfit physically before that that introduction of it is just going to have a massive effect, you know, on actual sort of you know, your ability to burn through things.
Yeah. This is a loaded question. From Macamorris, a mistake you see quite often within peaking physiques for show day. Where should we start?
Oh, I've got a good one for that, but carry on. I'll listen to you guys first.
No, you go first.
No.
the usual one, no fucking drinking water for fucking days out.
Yeah.
We've done it. Zach got mine. Well done, mate. We read mine, so that was good. Yeah.
Dude, just doing too much. Doing too much in general. Go and just absolutely...
Stop drinking water. No water on show day at all. Absolutely none. What have you taken diuretics-wise? Oh, the whole fucking mist. Oh, my God, here we go.
No water on show day, but let's put in 500 grams of carbs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
500 grams of carbs on the show day? Yeah, what time are you on? 10 a.m. Yeah, okay, cool. Good job, dickhead.
One thing we've seen a lot here in Denmark, at least, I see a lot of athletes, they... right before they go on stage, like 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before they go on stage, they eat shit. Like, yeah. they start eating fucking donuts and chocolate bars and stuff like that, thinking it'll make them full.
Bottles of Coke.
The only thing that's going to be full is their belly, and they go on stage and they're bloated. And these guys typically...
When you explain how fast it's absorbed, and they just look at you like, well, my coach doesn't know what he's doing. And I'm like, yeah, he fucking didn't. Sorry. Yeah. But that shit that you're scoffing didn't make you full on stage. It was the thousands of carbs that you ate eating towards this that made you full.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the water thing is so common, isn't it? Like, Zach, like you said, like, how many people, you know... I think water is the actual biggest thing
why people fuck up on prep. On peak training. I do. You can fucking eat what you want, but if you're not drinking any fucking water on the show day or fucking 2 days, like a day out, 2 days out, you ain't looking full. You're gonna look fucking flat, deflated. It doesn't matter what you fucking eat, you won't be able to get a pump, and yeah, you just ruined your whole fucking prep because of an old school method.
And that's got a load of bullshit, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a good one. I think one of the other ones is like it's hard to say. Overuse of diuretics, because we've all seen people like overdo it. You know, I've definitely, maybe with like one or two clients, gone a little bit over, not to the point where you're like, oh Jesus, that's ruined the whole physique. There's definitely factors that can affect it, but like, you know, you look at them and go, oh, probably next one we won't do as much because that's not needed for them specifically. Like, yeah, you can see that with some people, can't you? Like, you're overcooking it, but
yeah, I haven't necessarily overcooked it, but I totally mistimed it.
Yeah, or that.
And it's the risk you take with it when you're using them. Like, if you decide to go down that route, and like, I'm not like before
and
over again.
3 days later, you're still really dry. You're still pissing like a racehorse, and it's like, oh, hang on a minute.
I'm sure it was that. It's terrible. I've done that before.
I think if there's one thing people could do to help their like general peaks, it would just be to make their water or just general fluid intake and their sodium intake and standardize that prior to the peak week. So that's standardized like a couple weeks out. That takes out a lot of
the least thing you can do is just keep that consistent
into that peak week. But people, they don't keep track of it. And then when peak week comes around, they just start fucking with it without knowing where things are at.
Exactly.
A lot of the time, I agree with you completely. It's really, if you can get them to do that, that's amazing. A lot of the time, some of the time, people aren't going to do that. And they're just way too lazy to do that at that point because they just wrote off and got nothing left. But if you can just keep them doing what they've been doing, and I'm like, don't add more, don't take away, and don't start cranking it and go, well, maybe I shouldn't have this. Just do it exactly how you have been going, and we'll be perfectly fine. Because things will just, like, literally just stay.
That's what I ask all my clients. I ask them to buy, like, a mini scale that goes down to, like, 0.1 grams.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you weigh it, it's a good way to really get anyway. So just in the morning, you just weigh your total salt of the day.
Weigh it out. Yeah, because that's a great way to do it as well. Just like literally just for the day. And then as long as it's gone by the end of the day, you've had what you needed to have that day.
Yeah, like I don't ask people to go with flute. I don't ask them to go to a specific number. I ask them to track for a couple of days. And like wherever they're at, if they're used to drinking 3 liters, there's no reason for me to ask them to be drinking six. And if they're used to drinking six, they can just continue that. But we just start to standardize things like a month out. Yeah. And then if anything needs tweaking, it's so easy because you can have like an idea of the outcome. But what I typically see here is people, they don't keep track of their flute and their sodium intake. And then when peak week comes around, they start drinking shit tons. Like we're talking like 8 to 10 liters, which most people probably aren't doing on a daily basis. They do that for like the first half of peak week. They mess up their sleep because they're going to the toilet every 10 minutes. And then a couple of days out, they just cut everything out. No salt and no water. And then they eat like pigs.
Old school load of shit doesn't work. Absolutely load of rubbish.
I think the...
Great way to wash the mucus, like the protective mucus off your kidneys. Really great way to do that if you want to do that.
The irony of the pre-stage feeding, even at the Olympia, there were probably 30 people in that class who are eating Snickers bars, Pringles, donuts, all sorts. You know, I won't say his name. I nearly said his name. There was a chap who won a classic physique. I think me and Ross was actually there with me. Chap who won a classic physique pro show in Spain last year, who, as he was pumping up backstage, the chap who was helping him pump up fed him 3 jam donuts backstage on the fucking steps as he was pumping up. And I no joke, I must have counted 30 seconds between the last donut going in and him going on stage. And the fact that he won, I was like, dude, fair play. That's pretty impressive.
But, like, but it wasn't the donuts that made him win.
No. So like, Maybe he was just hungry. Maybe he was just hungry.
Just after mid-session.
He was going high boat.
Just listening to his body.
Listening to his body.
He's obeying his hunger cues, Cal.
Hey, coach, I definitely need some fucking food. I'm listening to my fucking body here. Yeah.
His freestyle libre told him his blood glucose was low, so he had to pop.
There's a few things. I think overfeeding people as well is something that people need to watch out for. Yeah. Stop overfeeding people, especially females.
Yeah.
They don't need that much food.
They really don't. Sometimes they barely need to be touching anything for a peak running in. But everyone wants to do a peak week. Everyone wants to say, oh, here comes peak week. And they all want to do their YouTube or Instagram post or like glute shot in the mirror. But sometimes you just don't. Because sometimes you can just very carefully keep your food pretty much where it was with a slight introduction of carbohydrates towards the back end and stick you on stage because you'll look exactly the same as you would have done.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's simple as it sounds. If the person is smaller, they need less. You know, it is in a case that's obviously there's complexities and thought as well for peaking anyone. It's not just like because you're small, you know, it's easy. It's not necessarily easy. It's very, very easy to give them too much of anything, really. And if you overfeed somebody, then like, you know, I'd rather be over, especially at a regional, I'd far rather be underfed than overfed.
Absolutely.
As soon as you spill that off, then trying to build that confidence.
Well, for a bikini class, you might as well just like stick yourself on the end. If your waist isn't controlled tight, you're better off being 80% full and just looking, you know, with a very tight, nice, you know, lean waist and everything like that all pulled in. You know, your posing is good, your symmetry is all there, everything's where it needs to be, than going like, no, I need to be full because these girls are big and I need to have pop in. I'm like, no, that's your hunger brains telling you to do something you shouldn't do. Rein it in.
I think the that like Emil said, that whole management of electrolytes is just something that needs to happen in prep before you even get to a close proximity stage, so it's consistent. And then use the rule of thumb as feeding requirements increase, as loading requirements increase, as carbohydrate increases, you've got an increased need to partition. So fluid and sodium in particular need to rise with that, but they don't need to rise that much. The whole concept of water loading, when we're looking at loading water into a show, realistically, that process of diuresis happens in a very short space of time. So if you suddenly do 10 liters of water on Monday and you're like, I'm going to be dry as a bone by the weekend, you literally only need to manipulate water in that last 12 to 18 hours to actually have any influence there at all. So don't use this whole crazy fancy water manipulation. Just keep that as consistent as you can. And then if you are going to manipulate that last kind of 12 to 18 hours before stage is the window to do it in, but never removing it. And just to appreciate your body is smarter than you are. So like if you cut water for a long period of time, there's a hormone called antidiuretic hormone is going to dump and have an imbalance with a hormone called aldosterone, and you're going to start to retain more fluid, particularly where you don't want it, which is in that subcutaneous layer between skin and muscle. So that layer, you are going to look softer on stage. That's what's ultimately going to ruin the look. And then in that situation, people have cut water. They might have mismanaged their diet. Now they're taking diazide pre-stage because they think, oh, it's going to get me dry. That diazide then pulls all that fluid and electrolytes out of the muscle. Now they're flat, and you've just totally fucked your entire peak in the last 12 hours.
They're flat and wet.
They're flat and soft, which is the worst.
Soggy possible. And flat. That's soggy. Perfect competition look.
And I think from a feeding perspective, like just understand, you know, your loading requirements should be calculated and tested way before the actual time that you actually come on stage as well. So it shouldn't just be I'm a firm believer in like reactive peaking in terms of like we're taking it meal to meal and we might make small manipulations, but you've already got a game plan in your head as to how you're going to run it before the weekend or before the 1 and 2 days outcomes. It's not just going to be made up.
You're using your refeeds at that point. You probably will be doing them if you're in shape on point and beforehand. You're going to be refeeding to gauge, oh, okay, that much carbs does this much to this person. X equals, you know, whatever. It all adds up very nicely. And you get the given result. You look at it and you go, you guys probably do this. I get them to go, all right, cool. But when's your next like push session or pull session, upper body sort of work, whatever? Like, oh, it's on the fucking Wednesday. All right, well, hold out. Monday, Tuesday, we'll load you. Hold out this weekend. Monday, Tuesday, load. Wednesday, go pump up. Take pictures in the gym. I want to see what you look like once you're actually filled out from those carbohydrates. Regular, standard, chilled environment, everything else is normal. Don't start doing anything mad, and then we'll just go from there. And that way we get a good gauge of the two. Or like first thing on waking, go do some push-ups, go do some press-ups. I want to see what a pumped full actually looks like once we put that amount of carbs in for 2 days, and then we'll just gauge it. Because then we start getting some real, like some data, visual, and you know, numbers that we can just put down. And all right, cool, that's roughly what we need, maybe a touch more.
That is highly underrated, and that's something I learned from you, Cal, using that like in prep refeeds as like data collection for peaking.
Especially in that close event, like if you're trying to give somebody give yourself the best opportunity to know what to do on show day, try and do it beforehand. It's pretty simple, you know. It's like, what size are you and how long do you have, and they're kind of the two questions that you ought to ask before when it comes to feeding requirements.
In an ideal world,
we've all got our guys and girls ready a fucking week or 2 weeks out, right? Yeah. And you practice those loads, you practice those peaks. You try. I think a good thing to do is try and find out what sort of time your client's going to be on stage, because then you can say, hey, listen, on Friday can you do us a favor and try, if you've got the ability, if they're not at work, if you could train at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because that's when about you're going to be on. Let's get 3 meals down you, X amount of water down you, see how you look. And then if they feed back to you and fucking now, you know, Zach, fucking now, this is the best I've ever looked. I look full, I look dry 20 minutes into my session. Well, that's you just done your peak for next week. You just done your
job done. That's it. Yeah. Box ticks. What meals did you eat? Those ones, cool. Do a little bit less just to make sure that nerves don't mess up your stomach. Knobs are good. Do those food sources as well. Get on stage, you're sorted.
Yeah. You know them donuts and the fucking cookies and everything that hasn't been in your diet for the whole prep. Probably best if we leave them out just for that day. Like, and
make as soon as you walk off stage and you've collected your sword, you can eat one.
You can have some of them then.
Not if you didn't.
And then you all know what you get, don't you, the next day. Hey, coach, I look well better the next day.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
They're just full over the waist, aren't they? Every time. But it's good as well when you do get somebody's look early on and you know, and you like, it's very, very easy because you haven't done all of the things involved in the peak, maybe no diuretics, you maybe haven't done anything too wild, and you get this look. It's very easy to go, right, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to add these things in. If you're fully confident that person looks like ready to go on, don't be afraid to go, do you know what, I'm not doing anything except that. You know, it's worth being able to have that level of confidence to do that, because I was met with that last season. I was like, right, that's pretty good here. And it didn't involve anything that I would have, like, or anyone would maybe traditionally use in terms of like anything you hadn't had up until that point. But it was good. I did, took the class, lost out the overall, but won the class. You know, and it was open bodybuilding, like, so it was one of those things I was like, Jesus. And you know, then the following 2 weeks after that, that's when I kind of made the call that I wish I didn't. And I kind of wish I just done exactly what I did prior. You know, so it's very easy to get wrapped up with it. It's peak week, this must happen, even for people like us. You know, but if you find that look, just hold it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's something that will get refined with time. The more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah.
And that's like...
Any of the good ones, Kel?
Yeah, I'll walk through it now. This is quite an interesting one. That's probably applicable to some of us. This is aimed at me, but there's probably... Tom, you could probably comment on this, and Ross, although Ross, I think you might have one more in you. How did you decide to stop competing and focus on your coaching? Was it a hard decision? And what do you feel has changed since making that decision?
Go ahead, bud.
It wasn't a hard decision for me because I can't maximize two things at once. And especially for, you know, my competitive aspirations as a bodybuilder, I did one show in 2019. I've got a 1-0 record, mate. I'm done.
No. Didn't you compete in fucking division fucking 12 though?
No, I did PCA first. It's just I just can't manage. I can't coach and run the business I want to run in the same capacity by trying to maximize two things. And especially when you're like, you know, we've all been there. It's all relative. So say like peak off season, my 300 pounds is the same as Ross's 250, 260. It's the same as a meal's 250, whatever. When you're in those peak phases where progress is going to be maximized, either prep or off season, it is fucking dreadful to maintain that for a long period of time and progress on either side of the spectrum. And to do that and still manage to maximize your cognitive function, your focus on everything else is really fucking hard. And I do believe, I'm a firm believer in, you can maximize both for a period of time, but you're going to get to a point where it's just not conducive to taking something the way it could go, if that makes sense. And for me, it's like, I love bodybuilding and I'm always going to love bodybuilding, but I think you just love both sides. And I've got no issues at all just taking people through preps and coaching people, because honestly, I'll sit at this desk in front of this computer from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed. And I don't care. Like, I enjoy it. It's absolutely fine. Like most, you know, some people outside of our circle, outside of our industry, would be like, you're mad. Like, why would you sit at home all day in front of a computer and just do nothing? It's like, if you're passionate about something and you love it, that's all it is, right?
For me, it's maybe a bit more double-barreled, but like definitely one of them is the same sort of things that you said there. So what for me now is like with coding with my little boy, with my focus being more towards business in terms of like growing the team, doing as well as I can, pro cards, people going to the Olympia, that sort of stuff. my bodybuilding cannot physically, like you said, exist within that realm of me getting there. I can't get people there and get, you know, and coach to the level that I want to coach to. If I'm, because I said this to people, and people are like, well, you should be able to give 100% to everything that you do and all that. And I'm like, well, you can for a bit, maybe, right? Like here and there, you know, whatever. But you have 100% to give in a day, yeah? You know, you don't have more than that. You can't give 100% to one thing, 100% to another thing for, like, sustainable, like, massive amount of period of time, because eventually you'll just fucking flatten yourself. Like, you, when you start really trying to push up to, like, super, super high levels on either aspect of that, like bodybuilding with your actual own or coaching to, you know, high level stuff, you've got your path to take, you know, eventually at one point you really do. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, Zach, you definitely prove that you can do both. Like, you can definitely coach at like a super, super high level, like, and then compete at a high level yourself. But let me ask you this, and you know, whatever you say is whatever you say. Once you do get the card, what are you going to do from there? Are you going to keep going, or are you sort of done with it there? Like, what would you do?
Honestly, like, I've had this fucking battle in my head so many fucking times. Yeah. And if I'm honest with you, I generally do enjoy coaching more than what I do. I get the same buzz. I get the same buzz. When my fucking clients are on that stage, I literally feel like I'm on that fucking stage. I'm walking up and down the fucking... Exactly. I'm walking up and down. I'm super excited. I'm nervous. I'm fucking scared. I'm excited. And those are all the things that I get whilst competing myself anyway. But honestly, I mean, I was speaking to Cal the other day about it, but I love the process. I love the process of going through it. Now, will I ever compete again? Probably. But whenever, like, I'm not going to say I've got no aspirations to ever be an IFBB pro, because honestly, for years, it was a fucking dream. It was a dream. But also as well, I kind of, again, speak to Kelly Bader about this. I also know that I know being I like to say a top tier coach. Okay. Being a top tier coach. I also understand I can look in the mirror and look at my physique and structure and go, even if I was lucky enough to be at the right show at the right time and get a pro card, I'm not going anywhere with it. I'm not going anywhere.
But you take it and then you hand it back and you go, actually, I'm just going to carry on doing amateur because I haven't done it.
So the next time I ever do it, I'm always going to want to do it because I enjoy the fucking process more than anything else. So I'll always do it, but I mean, I'm definitely in the I don't know what you call it, but on the side of the court where it says if you can't do like you and like Cal says, you can't do fucking both at a fucking 100% for fucking too long, like for too long. So if I do it again, it will be show done. That's it.
Yeah.
It'll be no show after show after show trying to chase something, because it will be that time from when I've competed, and then you're doing all them others, would be where my business.
You're super, super realistic about your ability, which I really respect in someone. And people who don't have that, I think they're going to set themselves up to either really start resenting bodybuilding and really start like not understanding, like, I couldn't possibly, why am I not doing this? Surely I'm good enough. Whereas you're looking at it from an actual coaching point of view at your own physique. Now, I've said this about myself before, the best I could possibly do, my physique, me maxed out for like three, say I've worked for like 3 years solid towards something, 2 or 3 years solid towards something. And I ended up getting as big as I possibly needed to, then dieting down. I could probably, if I'm really lucky with it as well, in terms of the lineup, win the novice class at the British with PCA. That's
it. But again, could what you need to give for 3 years, could you give that for 3 years and hold your such a high standard with who you are as a coach?
No, I couldn't do that. And I, you know what would happen from that? People would go, oh, you won the novice with PCA, the British. Oh, cool, well done. Like, you have some pros that you were coaching to the Olympia. Oh, right. Yeah. What drives in business more for me as a coach? And what do I enjoy more? I want to see them win the fucking Olympia, go to the Olympia, do well at the Olympia.
Win
pro shows, do that shit. And win the British in the fucking open classes. I don't care about my fucking bodybuilding. It means nothing to me. It's why I'm fat and shit at the moment.
That's what I was weird with. I kind of feel I feel like if you three were a Venn diagram, I feel like I'd be in the middle. I feel like that's kind of where I am. I'm in this kind of weird one where like I'm battling with a couple of different things. And again, I'm pretty realistic about what I'm going to be able to do. And what I like, the way I kind of say to the kind of people when I said it, I was like, I know at best with a good go at it, I can be a good bodybuilder. And if I really push my body weight, possibly crack. So in the right moment, maybe a card, depending on how well the off season actually went. But my ceiling's not that high in bodybuilding, but I know how high my ceiling is in coaching. Like I'm so aware of it. You know, like I know I'm good at this job. This is what I'm really, really good at. This is what I love to do. And I love bodybuilding. And then the other thing I battle with is that beyond kind of coaching and like paying my rent and the dog, I don't really have any other responsibilities. So I'm kind of like I'm kind of young still. So I kind of made the call that I'm just kind of take the next kind of 10, 11 months. I'm just kind of moving north, keeping composition in check. I don't want to get to the point where I'm like, I hate my life. I'm so big. I refuse to get to that point again. I was at that to start prior to my last prep. I was at that point. And if in like 10 months, I could look at myself and go, maybe one more year building up, I could do something here. But I'm going to have to be hyper realistic about it. If the answer is no, I'm like, you know what? Before I'm not 30, I'm not even 30 yet. I'm done. I'm happy to hang it up and be realistic with myself. But I think I have to give it one more go. Actually, I'm going to try coach myself at this stage as well for one crack as well.
One thing that will still niggle at me occasionally, unfortunately, is not all the time, but sometimes I'm like, maybe when I'm on masters, like maybe when I'm like 40, and I'll just do one for my own enjoyment of it. Like maybe when I've like another 10 years, then I'll come back and just one last little go, just to show off some crazy condition, and then disappear back into the nothingness. Like, but again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think as much as I don't like to admit it, I'm probably done. It's quite hard to say it sometimes.
And by then,
I'm just not happy with my last showing. I think I'm just not happy with it, and that's still always like, come on, you could have just a little more.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think like that as well.
I had a chat with Emil about this when he signed up with Pro Coach, and you know, we had that chat about being the athlete coach, and I'm a firm believer the athlete coach role can be done very, very well. And there are a lot of exceptional coaches who also compete at a high level. But one thing that I've opened my eyes to since I've stopped pursuing my own bodybuilding is just the amount of energy that even competitively, just the amount of energy I was having to dedicate to being that, you know, to being that heavy, to existing like that. When I stopped, I was like, Jesus Christ, like I am capable of so much more in my day from a productivity perspective, a thinking perspective. And if I was competing, I would maximize them both relative to my ability. I might work with a little bit less in terms of client numbers, and I'd maximize the clients I'm working with. And you can balance those two very, very well. But there'll come a time when you stop competing, and it's great because then you can just expand that capacity from a coaching perspective because you've got all this time available to you. And for me, like, I think you guys will be the same. I'm an extremely obsessive person in terms of like for my job and my coaching, I can't do bodybuilding at 20% and coaching 80%. Like I can't do something without maximizing it. So honestly, as silly as it sounds, I'd rather not bodybuild at all. I'd rather just focus on one thing. If I train in the week, sweet. I might train two or three times, but I'm just obsessed about one thing now. And it's just how my mind works. Like when I was, you know, 2 years ago when I was a little bit bigger and a little bit heavier and I was training properly at that moment in time, in my head, I was balancing them both. And that was me in my career at that point. But obviously now goals change, your focus changes, your what you prioritize in that hierarchy changes, and these things just transition. So it's not that we're saying like, oh, you can't be a coach and an athlete. Like you can, because we're seeing that thousands of times, and there are
exceptions. You can do it, but you cannot do it to the best capacity for the coaching point nor the athlete point.
It's just the management of the two. Like if you're going to be both, just accept that, right, know the amount of clients that you, the amount of athletes clients that you can handle and maximize that to your best ability. But then don't allow that to be compromise your ability to be an athlete as well. Because if you take too much on coaching, you're going to suffer as an athlete.
Yeah,
vice versa.
People need it in a practical point because they're still not quite getting it. If you have 70 clients as a coach, right, it's considered pretty damn good, right? But if you really obsess into your bodybuilding and you took a back seat and you just did it sort of more from a lifestyle sort of, you know, enjoying it as and when you can sort of thing and do the best that you can within reason and not like fully obsess into it, that's another 20 clients on top of that.
Maybe.
Who knows? 25, something like that. Maybe another 30. And that in itself means that you're able to progress more in business, and you're just putting more time and effort into that. But like, It's 100% of your day. That's a day, 100%. You can put so much into so much. You don't have more than that. You can't make more because it doesn't exist.
Yeah. It's like we're trying to work two full-time jobs.
That's my thoughts anyway. I think it's quite a debatable topic. There's a lot of people that really won't like this.
You not like it all you want, but it's true. I don't care if you don't like it. The reality is, if you want to coach at a certain level, you look at any like legitimately top level. I mean, like even beyond us, none of them are active bodybuilders. Not one of them. Okay, I don't know one. Right, and the reality is that it takes so much of your time and your energy that you do end up having to reach a point where there's a fork in the road and you have to take one of those directions. And like, and again,
we're not really seeing lean loss or why have I forgotten his name? I shouldn't. Real technician, Kisacito. They're not stepping on stage at like the weekend sort of, you know, amateur shows, are they?
They haven't done for a long time.
Hasn't sort of picked up his card and gone, go on, then one more try.
Yeah.
You know,
Amir, what's your what's talk me through your stance on it, doing it right now?
No, I'm sorry, buddy. I am gonna have to shoot.
Yeah, so when I signed as a coach, I obviously have my own coaching going already. All right. Yeah. So when I signed with Pro Coach, I already was I was 5 weeks out, I think 5 weeks out of my own show. I had like 8 athletes, competing in that time as well. And obviously having my own coaching company besides that. And then when I signed with Pro Coach, there was just a lot of things I had to like learn. New softwares, new like working together with you guys. There's so many, like now we got Circle, we got Trello, we got all of these things at once. I wasn't used to working in Sheets as well.
Yeah.
Like just setting up a new client took me like 3 times the time it usually would. And I found myself spending so much more time on my coaching in the same time that I had less and less energy to do so because of my own prep.
Mm.
And that's the reason we actually cut my season short. Well, for one, also because I was like, well, we got another 15 pounds to put on, and timing wise, let's just wait and let me get like integrated into working like this.
Yeah.
But it's definitely doable. Like that was just the timing of it. I think next time it just comes down to time management. Now I'm well integrated into all of the systems and things are cracking, but I know that I'm probably going to have to pick between those. I wouldn't agree that you necessarily have to. It depends on how many athletes you want to take on.
I'm not even in a situation where I need to make that choice now. I'm just saying that I know eventually that choice will need to be made. I'm not saying anyone has to, but I do believe there gets to a point in the number of athletes and plus the amount of work that you do have means a choice will need to be made.
Yeah, it depends on your own ambitions within your coaching as well. Like,
exactly.
You can have 50, 40... Yeah, 40 or 50 athletes that are doing really well and paying you well, and you can live well off of that and still be a good athlete yourself.
Yeah.
But you're just going to have to know your limit. And I think there's also only one way to find it. I think you found it that way, Callum. You're just taking on board until you're like, fuck, I'm drowning.
Yeah.
Obviously, don't want to do that. But like, I've never reached the point where I've felt overwhelmed with work. Like, I've always made, you know, been able to make it work somehow. But I've never had 100 clients. So, you know, if I get there, that might be when I say, okay, one of those things are going to have to take a step back. But I'm ambitious with my own bodybuilding. One thing I've said publicly here in Denmark on my own podcast is I was a bodybuilder before I was a coach. And like, that's where my passion started. And that's where my passion still is. And I think that's also beneficial in your coaching to actually like still go through some of those same things. And I'm still learning things through my own process. Like I'm still young, so I'm still learning tons through doing shit myself and failing with things. Just like we talked about earlier on this episode, we learned from my previous 2 off seasons what we're going to change this off season. And every time you learn something, every time you work with new coaches, you learn something new that you can apply with your own clients. But yeah, I'm ambitious with my own bodybuilding.
I think what helps with Emil as well is what I said about myself is you're probably a little bit more ambitious about your and you want to go into the down the athlete direction because of your potential as well. Like you know that you've got fantastic potential as well. So that you got to understand the meal that helps you as well. That helps you as well because, you know, again, you're a fucking fantastic coach. So you can look at yourself and go, I could go fucking far with this. I could go fucking far. So that certainly helps with the decision that, you know, I still want to pursue this.
It definitely does. Like I was lucky with how I was shaped. Because, like, I didn't fall into the anabolic pot as a kid. Like, it's taken me fucking 12 years to still be 20 pounds under my weight cap. But the structure is there. And if I have the consistency for long enough, I'm sure that I can. I can compete at a high level. I just want to take that as far as I can. And then manage coaching on the side. Like, I've managed to make a living off of my coaching. I'm living well and I'm content like that. I don't need money enough to like buy 3 supercars. If I cannot not worry about my bills and do my bodybuilding and supply my family.
You want one though.
Get the rewards.
Get one.
Yeah, maybe one.
Still one.
But
there's something that I respect a lot in that, in regards to, like, obviously at your age and being a younger coach, but obviously being at the level that you are already, you know, just understanding that you're going to be doing this for another decade, 2 decades plus. So everything's going to come at the time it comes. So you're going to have a time now where you can manage the work and you can live the lifestyle you want to live and you can fund, you know, the family that's around you, but also maximize your bodybuilding and fucking enjoy that. Cause that's going to be, it's going to be, you know, the best time in your career. But then there's also going to be a time where those priorities will change and, you know, your focus will change and then your energy in terms of what it's being placed into will change. So, you know, I think it's like Ross said, it's just if you're going to do both, just know your capacity to do both and just balance them because you can most definitely do both.
That's what's that.
Yeah. And, you know, with bodybuilding, there's a time limit to how long you can do this. Like, even if you do this for very long and you do it till you're like 40 plus, that's still young, like compared to a lot of other endeavors that you could do, not sports, but like any other job, you go to like 60, 70, and then you have that coaching to live off for the remaining of your work life. But yes, priorities might change. You know, if one day I wake up and I have 3 kids, I might be like, don't want to spend.
Hopefully not out of surprise. Like, hopefully.
Yeah, I was just saying, if you wake up and you have 3 kids, you're like,
where the fuck are they come from?
Yeah, you know, that definitely makes a change. Now we got our first one coming. We got our first coming in August.
Like, that's going to be your third focus, bro.
It's going to be my what?
That's your third focus. What I'm saying is, I'm being serious. Like, on about you're talking about at the minute, trying to fucking be the best coach you can be, trying to be the best athlete you can be. Well, now you've also got trying to be the best dad you can be, and it's a full-time fucking job, bro. Like, as soon as the little one's here, you're gonna think, fucking wait. I can tell you now from experience, twice, you're gonna look at the world in a fucking different light.
Yeah, I hear that, and like, I'm excited for it. I always wanted kids, and I understand that it's gonna be there's gonna be some time adjusting to that. My own life, definitely, like, priorities are going to change because now I'm not the most important.
I mean, it's still going to be, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's not going to be doable, but it's just going to be.
For sure it's doable. Like, you see top guys doing bodybuilding at the Olympia level, like, with 3 kids, 2 kids, so it's definitely doable. They might not have 60 clients on the side, but you might just have to scale that down, up your prices, whatever. There's always a way to make things work. I think so, but.
Yeah, absolutely. But
as long as I'm enjoying bodybuilding, I'm going to keep doing it. And then if I ever feel like I want to just focus on coaching, then I always have that available to me.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, it'll help me with my coaching to, like, get a name within competitive bodybuilding.
100%.
I'm not saying that's a necessity. But
like, it helps. If you're a shit hot bodybuilder and then you're also a shit hot coach, you're not just relying on the fact that you're a pro to fund your business. John Jewett, for example, you know, perfect example of somebody who's an incredibly high level pro, but arguably he doesn't necessarily coach as much as he used to, but, you know, arguably one of the most educated people in the field on the planet, you know. So it's like, it's a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on that note, I'll just miss that HMG injection tonight. I don't know where it went.
I've got this vial of...
FSH is still low. Oh,
yeah, about that. That's crazy how we were able to conceive.
Mate, I have not... The amount of clients that have got pregnant from me where I wasn't even, like, foreseeing planning it, and then I'm scratching my head, like...
Yeah, I always say this, there's got to be something we don't know.
She got pregnant 2 weeks after my show. So it was, like, trend and super drawl and...
Yeah.
My first was conceived, like, halfway through prep, so everything was fucking...
Yeah. But Hayden, she didn't even have her ovulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't even have that, so it was like, it shouldn't be possible.
Miracle lady.
That's wild.
It's funny, Zach. It was a guy at my gym. He told me that he got his first one when he was like loaded up on the heaviest cycle ever. I think he said he was doing like 3 grams, and him and his wife almost like split because he didn't think it was his. He didn't believe it. He was like, it can't be mine. I'm loaded up to both ears.
It's not mine. The baby has glute striations. Or maybe
the kid's coming out like Jay Cutler. It's
maybe just coming out from double boy. Goosh.
It was the same with Hayden just after he turned pro. And obviously Kelly was pregnant not long after that, and he'd been darting for like 9 months. No. It's like, how is that? How is that even possible?
I don't have the energy.
Cal's fucking going to sleep, drip feeding HMG, man.
but actually, on that note, with like managing kits and bodybuilding yourself, and then also being a coach, Emil, Beard Emil.
Yep.
Yeah. I just like he got his first child this March.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend didn't even have like maternity leave. She continued school. And I've seen Emil double his business while still doing his own bodybuilding and having a newborn.
Unimpressive.
And his wife didn't take she didn't take her leave. So
he was. It's the ultimate accountability, isn't it? It's like, right, there's a human and you need to feed it. Go to check it. You know, it's true. It's the ultimate accountability. Obviously, I've never had a baby. I have a dog. And when I got my dog, I was on cycle as well when I could see the dog.
That's fucking wrong.
I can't say on a straight face. Where is he?
Oh, God.
I embarrassed him. Well, that's that ultimate accountability. You know, you have a baby, you literally have a human to feed. So, like, you're going to work more harder than ever.
Yeah.
It's just down to time management most of the time.
Mm. I'm going to have to love you and leave you all because I've got to go to the fucking gym. I've got fucking 10 more check-ins to do.
If I see your car driving down my driveway, I'm going to launch rocket.
I need to fucking. Have you definitely not got a spare charger?
I got one, mate.
Fuck's sake.
Tana uses the desktop.
Fuck's sake.
You want me to do check-ins? I'll turn the screen off and I'll just start it with a big F-bomb. Motherfuckers, thanks for your updates.
Normally, what the fuck have you been doing?
What do you call this?
No, all right, okay. No, I am gonna. I'm gonna shoot, boys. I need to go to the gym. So, peace.
Peace out.
All right, see you, Zach.
In a bit, bud.
Ross, do you get any questions?
No, I just asked myself why did I put a Q&A up 30 minutes in advance? I don't think I got any more.
I've got another one. What traits do you look for in an athlete that wants to go all the way?
Well, the ability to communicate is one that you put up a video about today as well, Cal.
Yeah.
Being able to communicate even when you don't want to, like when you fucked up, if you binged on your diet or whatever, communication is key. If you want to be your best, I always tell my clients, the more you provide me, the more I can provide you. So without communication, you're not going to be able to go very far. The ability to work hard, the ability to to prioritize things when they don't want to, it's going to be the most important ones. Because if they communicate, you can work around most things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the coach's job to like find solutions.
Yeah. Humility. Like this body one is not humility as in like I'm a terrible bodybuilder, like, and I know it, you know, not that kind of humility. But I mean it's like humility to take instruction from the coach. Mm. You know, kind of way. Like I understand a lot of high level athletes are high level athletes for a reason, you know. Be it like, you know, something they was God given in genetic and they've just kind of winged it up until that point, but then you know they have that juxtaposition that they know everything because they're so good, you know, or what they've been doing up to that point has got them to that place, you know. But like there's an element by which if you hire a coach, you should respect and listen to what they have to say, you know, and if you are going to, like, you know, question things, just like, do it in a way that's like, that's manageable, respectful, that kind of way. Cause it's very easy to kind of, especially on a prep, to get a loggerheads about a decision, you know, and like, bear in mind that a coach will never make a decision with the interest to make your prep worse, you know, and they're not going to try and make you look any worse. So it's always important to understand that any decision that is being made is being based off the idea that we're trying to make it better, not worse. So, like, obviously, if you're in that situation where, you know, you are high level and you are coming down, the head does start to derail a little bit. Just remember to keep it sweet, keep it civil, you know, and have a discussion if needed. Most of the time, they're probably making the right call.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
I think that that being coachable topic is a really interesting one. Like, I had chap sign up yesterday, a couple of days ago. I think you'll know who they are. I won't say the name, but they are on the cusp of turning pro, and that's happened a few times now, and it hasn't happened. And like just from the outside in, I think the biggest barrier for them in terms of going that extra 10% from very, very good to then winning an overall and turning pro is just the capacity to be coachable, to just knuckle down into a process and keep the blinkers on, not to be distracted by so many things, and to be able to do that, but do it year round. Like it's all good being an athlete who's a good prep athlete, but for you to take yourself to the next level, you need to be a good athlete 365 days a year. And it's outside of the process as well as inside the process. And the amount of times, like, I don't mind saying it, but like Brandon, for example, is a fantastic bodybuilder. Brandon Harding is a fantastic bodybuilder in prep, a dreadful bodybuilder in the off season. And he won't mind me saying that, like, cause he'll hold his hand up. He's getting better. But the biggest thing for him is like the potential there for progress is exponential. It's insane. Like he's one of the most gifted athletes on the team from a genetics perspective in terms of his capacity to progress, because he's done that without doing an off season. If he approached the off season like he did a prep, that guy would be on the Olympia stage by the end of this year. I can guarantee you. But it's hard to do that, whether you're spinning so many plates, got other focuses in your life, whatever it might be. It's hard to do that when you haven't done that for a long period of time. But he was similar when he turned pro last year. Like it was him fully knuckling down into, right, I'm going to give this prep everything. Didn't slip up once. The previous prep before that, there was a couple of times where we had some issues, but didn't slip up once. And it's him stepping back and going, fucking hell, like, look what I just achieved. Like, I'm capable of that. And you need that within the process for them to open their eyes. But it's just that certain circumstance of being coachable, but being coachable year round as opposed to just for prep, such a big thing for a lot of top amateurs.
Yeah, massive. It is massive. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'll behave like a pro when I am one, you know, and it's like, and as much as you don't want to say to somebody that there is an element by which you're like, your bodybuilding needs to take precedence in the majority of your life. If you want to hit this level, you know, it kind of does, you know, it kind of does need to take precedence in most of what you're doing. You know, it's like, it's so easy to get wrapped in the idea that I'm an amateur, I can behave like one. But like, if you want to go pro, you're going to like, you really do need to act like one. You truly, truly do need to act like one. We like this conversation, the game one, when we say that even with Yemi, I was like, you know, if you've got this card now, you know, you've got these aspirations, you're telling all these people where you want to go, you know, like you better start behaving like you want to do that. And like, you know, away from social media, behaving that way 365, you know, and he's even myself, he's really knuckled down now towards the start of his prep coming up. So not really a stone's been unturned. But if you can do that and you can maintain it, you know, there's no real ceiling as to where you can go.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Right, let's look at what else we got. Also, Alex Freshwater just sent me his check-in photos from today. He looks fucking ridiculous.
He's a freak, man. He's a freak. just like one of the prettiest physiques to look at you'll ever see.
The amount of tissue he's grown, mate, is obscene. Yeah,
it's bananas. It's bananas.
Obscene. What else we got?
Alex is a perfect example of somebody who behaves like a pro, even though he's an amateur.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good example.
Yeah. Another one would be who's doing the same show. Well, to be fair, everyone that's doing Ben Weider this year, those first two shows, there are all the guys that are doing those shows are exceptional. Like Connor Renshin would be another one. Like he acts like he's already an Olympian because like the guy is the most disciplined, warding guy you'll ever meet. But you just got to think like the guy is typically the guys that are like that for the longest period of time are generally the guys that end up being the most successful.
Tom Kirby, he's the same.
Yeah.
He's the same. Exact same. His jacket photos the other day, man, are so good.
Right, Emil, this is one for you because you just did it on the free community page. Advice for someone who wants to compete in their first show, just started my first cycle. How would you approach with that cycle? So, like, what would you change potentially in the contest prep situation and the tools you got available within a first-time PED user?
Right. So if it's his first time, and assuming that it's the first time he's being exposed to anything that's super physiological,
yeah,
I don't think you're going to need to play any other tools at that end, at the end of a prep. I started my first cycle like 6 months out of a show, and I basically just ran that into the show, making like one escalation of, I think, 200 milligrams back then. I went from like 250 to 450 by adding in a DHT. But like, if he started his first cycle going into that prep, that should just carry him all the way through. There's no reason for him to start escalating further. Like he could even continue that same dosage post show and actually have that dose exposure for the first time in a surplus and still make progress out of it. I think people are escalating their doses too fast and not riding like each step of the stair, so to speak. But like, it depends on how the cycle is looking and if it's a long season. But for the most part, I would say not change anything. Like, that should carry him all the way through. If he's been natural up until this point, that super physiological level is he should be able to grow into that show.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah, that is probably quite a unique situation there in terms of first-time androgen exposure and a deficit.
Yeah, that's one of the times where you're able to really recon.
Yeah,
for the extended period of time. And depending on how long that prep is, like say it's a 20-week prep, and he starts at like 200 milligrams of test, which puts him in a super physiological state. At 10 weeks out, if he wanted to, he could bump that by 50 milligrams. It would still be a 25% increase, and he could probably still recomp for some of those weeks into the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also relative to your aspirations as well. I think that's something that's worth noting. Like, I think if you have somebody who has this very, very clear genetic capacity to go all the way, obviously it's few and far between where you find them, but they do land on your roster every now and again. I think in that situation, you may be more sitting in a situation where, okay, we can turn this up a little bit. But also at the same time, in that situation, if I met somebody who was about to start their first prep and you knew that they had this incredible ability to go far and they hadn't touched, I might like, here, why don't you not prep? Maybe let's give it a year. Let's push it a little bit. You know, let's actually introduce you to androgens in a productive environment. And then let's maybe go again next year. So that's obviously a bit of a catch-22 to the kind of set point that they said, but it's just looking at every option.
Yeah, but like I just did the video about, like, the goal in a prep is to maintain tissue.
Exactly.
You're like, most people are not going to grow much in a prep, maybe the first weeks, but definitely not for that last part. So this guy is going to grow muscle, but even if he like added doses, once he's fat free, he's not going to be growing muscle. So like, there's no reason for him to escalate those dosage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I would just ride it right out into the show and then just keep that, run some blots post show.
Yeah,
and if everything's good, like, he can just stay there, actually have that dose exposure in a surplus, and then keep growing.
Yeah, for sure. And even on that retaining tissue thing, I think it was, I don't know where he still does it, because I believe it was Joe Jeffrey used to actually bring dosages down when the prep started, didn't he? Because again, the idea of retaining tissue throughout. So again, it's like it's valid to be able to do that as well. You know, it'll make sense.
Mm. Yeah, I know Joe talks about like taking drugs higher in the off season compared to prep, because that's when like you're trying to put on new tissue.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
and it takes less. It takes like just with, like with training volume, it takes less to retain than it does to build.
Mm.
Many ways to skin and addy.
Yeah, like most people, like they train hard, they can maintain their tissue by doing absolute minimal volume. Yeah. Granted, they can train hard. Like my legs, I can do one set of legs a week and they will stay right where they are.
Mm.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Right. I think that might be all the questions, to be fair. How long have we been for? About an hour?
A little bit more, I think.
A little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, an hour 45, I'd say. I can tell you, I can feel Grace's eyes just burning in the front of my head through the wall.
Where is she?
She's sitting there waiting for me to come in and eat with her.
she's giving you the message without saying any vocal words.
Yeah. Yeah, she's fed my dinner to the dog, I'd say.
Right. Ross, I'm going to look at some tickets to get down to Manchester.
Yeah, do, man. The week that you'd said shouldn't be an issue at all. But the only thing I have coming up in April is a possible trip to, potentially, this is such a contrast, Sweden or Melbourne.
Oh, are you coming to Sweden?
I don't know. I could be in Australia. I'm not 100% sure whether I'm going to go or not. I've got Big Louis Burkett, you know, the open guy that I have. He's going for his card later on, the latter end of April, in the pro qualifier for season 8 in Australia. I'm thinking of going to it for him. I'd love to be there if I could. So I'm going to see what I can do.
I'm going to Sweden.
Yeah, if I'm not going to Australia, I'm going to go to Sweden.
Yeah, but Sweden is the second or third weekend.
It's third weekend, isn't it? I think that pro qualifier in Australia is the 23rd or the 23rd or 27th. If by some of you they don't cross over, I probably will just.
That's the week after Sweden, I think.
Yeah.
Right, I might just do both, to be honest. Yeah. Sweden's not crazy expensive. Not like Australia is, but I love that. I love all the. I told myself I'll travel to shows that I can warrant traveling to this year. You know, so I will go to as many as I can. Yeah, but I suppose in that sense, I probably will end up in both.
Yeah. Good luck giving James the invoice for the flights to Australia.
You've got a fucking dead. do you have loads of athletes there? No, I got one good one. But like he's really good. I'll send you his checkup photos and the invoice.
All good, all good. Right, fellas, it's a pleasure.
As always,
thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks for watching, guys, or listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Peace, love.